Welcome to Uncharted, an Arctic 360 podcast about the impact of COVID-19 on the North American Arctic. All summer long, we're talking to the people who live, work, and govern the Arctic to understand how we move forward from this moment in history. Today's theme is the Canadian region of Labrador. Yes, an entire region that accounts for 70% of the Newfoundland-Labrador landmass, but just 6% of the population. My guest today knows Labrador as well as anybody. It's Yvonne Jones, the Liberal Member of Parliament for Labrador and Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Northern Affairs. She's been a public servant in Labrador for decades, first as mayor of her hometown, as leader of the provincial Liberal Party, and eventually making her way to the House of Commons. In 2020, Yvonne has been responsible for guiding her constituents through the pandemic and helping build the Liberal government's response for the whole country. We talk about how a lack of infrastructure made the North particularly vulnerable in adapting to COVID, but how with support, the Canadian North can come out of this crisis and hopefully be stronger. I'm Erica Wallace, and when it comes to COVID-19, this is Uncharted.
Yvonne, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate you being on here.
Well, thank you, Erica, for the work you're doing and informing people about Canada's North. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, so let's get into it. I wanted to talk to you about Labrador today because, of course, you are the Member of Parliament for that region. And, you know, I was reading that the first case of COVID in Newfoundland Labrador was announced on March 14th, and then schools were closed 2 days later.
It was a few days later. It wasn't 2 days later, but that's fine.
What was going through your mind when that happened? And, you know, what have been some of the biggest challenges facing Labrador throughout this COVID crisis?
I think back in March when things started to close down and the public was really, you know, gaining more information about COVID-19 and what coronavirus would mean from a health perspective, you know, it was a time when people were not anticipating that we were going to have the massive closures that we would have or that we would have the number of cases of infection or positive infections within the country. So I think it was initially, okay, it's, you know, it's a health virus, you know, what does it mean? So I think people's ears were perked, but I believe it was in the week and the 2 weeks in March when it really started to sink in across Labrador what this really meant. It meant school closed. It meant businesses being shut down. And from that perspective, people started to stress and become more anxious about what was happening, and especially around the financial piece. There was a lot of people who were out of work. So how did they take care of their family? How do we sustain ourselves through this? And that became a tremendous stress for a lot of people. And I fielded many calls during those couple of weeks from people who were concerned about their health and also concerned about their financial situation and how they were going to get through these next few weeks. So I think for most Labradorians, it was like a lot of people across Canada. And that is the immediate concern was, you know, how do we manage our way through it? What do we need to do? So, you know, there was a lot of impulse buying for people who could afford to purchase. For those who couldn't afford to purchase, you know, there was a tremendous amount of stress that got added to their lives overnight. And that was one of the biggest challenges that I saw immediately from people. As the federal government started to announce that there would be financial supports, there would be programs, people who were very vulnerable within our society would have a crutch with the federal government to get through this. I started seeing, you know, people relax a little bit in terms of their fiscal situation, but the anxiety around travel increased, the anxiety around you know, the availability of foods in their communities and food security became greater. So there was a number, the issues kept changing as we moved through COVID-19. But Labrador, like most regions in northern Canada, the huge challenge for all of us was how do we fight this pandemic if it ends up on our doorstep? Small communities, very close-knit families, limited healthcare resources, limited transportation, little or no connectivity from a technology perspective. So, you know, all of these things were going to add to how we could respond to a pandemic in our communities. So immediately, people started to make decisions to close their communities. Even before the provincial and the federal government were closing down particular border areas in Canada and in the province, a lot of communities across the north were already, isolating themselves from the rest of the region and from their province or territory, and Labrador was no different. So one of the things that I did on a weekly basis was I had a call with all of the mayors on the Cox and chiefs in all the communities across Labrador, where we would discuss, what those challenges were, how we could set out good policy to protect the communities and to deal with current situations as they were arising. And that was very effective. And I felt that not only was it a good network in terms of sharing information, but it was a really good network in providing confidence and support to each other at a time when we really needed that to get through this entire pandemic. So, you know, I was really pleased with how the leadership in Labrador worked together to deal with each and every situation as they showed up on our doorstep through this pandemic.
Right. I think that's been one of Canada's stronger points in getting through a pandemic, is sort of a coordination of leadership across levels. That's something, you know, I just as a student on the ground have been pretty pleased with.
Yeah, absolutely, Erica. And it happened right across the country, and it happened in all kinds of community networks, you know, whether it was dealing with urban Indigenous, whether it was dealing with food security in the largest cities or the smallest towns. It was how people pulled together, and it was no different in Labrador. You know, we were thousands of kilometers apart from each other, virtually through the internet and through our telephone conversations, because we didn't have the capacity to use Zoom meetings, so we did everything by conference calls. But it was those calls and that supporting each other that certainly helped us get through each and every stage of this to date.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that kind of leads into my next question about, you know, the North is, I feel like it was particularly vulnerable of all the places in the country to COVID because of a historic lack of infrastructure. How has that affected your ability to keep people safe?
Well, it's quite obvious, and this pandemic has certainly made it even more glaring for all who wants to see in this country that there's a tremendous gap in infrastructure in Canada's northern regions, right across the territories and in northern areas of many provinces, including here in Labrador. And that absentee of infrastructure certainly made it much more challenging in terms of looking at how we're going to deal with an outbreak, how we're going to be able to provide the medical care that we need. Many of these communities have very small hospitals and clinic operations. Any severe medical issues, people are airlifted out for those procedures. So, you know, you're limited in your medical capacity, but you're also limited on many fronts, both in transportation, both in internet and connectivity to the rest of the world, in how goods are transported in and out of those regions. So food security was a major concern and still is a concern through this pandemic. So it was very glaring that the North really lacked the infrastructure to be able to manage any kind of a pandemic. And if there's one thing that comes out of all of this, I'm hoping that it will be stronger connectivity, both with cell and internet access for all northern regions within Canada, and also stronger transportation links to the rest of the country. We know that you can't provide every single service in every single community that people need, but the least we can do is give them good, solid, accessible transportation and internet connectivity and cell connectivity to the rest of the world. And those, in my mind, are as basic and essential as electricity is. And therefore, communities should have that infrastructure readily within their regions. So that would have been one of the things that could have helped us a lot more to get through this and will help us in the future. But the recognition that there are gaps and these gaps need to be addressed was quite evident during COVID-19.
Right. Oh, I guess, you know, and moving forward and building that infrastructure, you know, in April, Minister McKenna announced that there's going to be an infrastructure stimulus package. Will you be able to play a role in making sure that the North is a priority in that package? And I guess, what are the biggest priorities? I suppose are some of the ones that you just mentioned.
Well, absolutely. I've certainly been feeding many ideas and suggestions into the Government of Canada, to Minister McKenna personally, into her office about the kinds of infrastructure projects that I would like to see the Government of Canada focus on in the North. In the last 2 years, I completed a full consultation process across Canada's Northern and Arctic communities on the Northern and Arctic Framework Agreement with the Government of Canada. And a lot of the emphasis on those consultations and the outcomes of that was around infrastructure in Canada's North. So there's a great opportunity here for the Government of Canada to really help rebuild the Northern economy. And in doing so, they're helping support and sustain the whole Canadian economy. So I would like to see them focus more on transportation corridors into the North. That means, you know, building on our airlines, building on our road transportation networks, building on our marine transport networks. And that will also include ensuring that we have appropriate ports in many of the Arctic and Northern communities that doesn't exist today and was neglected over many decades in those communities. So those kinds of infrastructure, as I said earlier, will be critical. The other piece I want him to focus on is ensuring that there's good, solid internet connectivity and cell access for all Northern and Arctic regions. And whether that's through fiber or through satellite, it really doesn't make a difference. To me, it doesn't make a difference to the people who live there. It's the ability to connect. And in being able to connect, then during crises like we're going through right now in this country, kids can learn at home. They have the technology then to be able to do that. People can work from home. They will have the full ability of technology as every other Canadian has to be able to do that. We'll be able to do medical services from a virtual perspective, which we've been unable to do in a major way. We've really done some innovative things around distance medical care through distance, but there's a lot more that we can do. And, you know, I really realized during this pandemic, you know, as doctors had to reach out to patients across the North and specialists, how important it would be and how much more effective it would be if they could actually sit in front of a computer screen and have that dialogue with their physician and with their specialist. And so those are major pieces of infrastructure that I really want to see the Government of Canada focus on because it improves the basic living of so many people in the North. The other thing I saw through this pandemic is that when the Government of Canada did a deal with the Inuit governments in the Arctic regions and in Labrador, the Inuit governments took that money and they allocated it to families in terms of food vouchers and heating vouchers. This was substantially improved the quality of living for so many people in the northern and Arctic regions. The feedback I got was unbelievably positive, and I was amazed at how many people said to me, you know, those food vouchers, that extra $500 voucher in a month was able to help me immensely in terms of feeding my family and having goods in my home. So, you know, there was some projects that were launched like that for the first time ever, but we saw how it contributed to the overall quality of life for people in Canada's north, but we also seen that it gave them a level of sustainable living that they may not have had prior to COVID-19. So those are programs I would like to for us to evaluate as a government, and how do we continue to support families in that way. We have programs around Nutrition North and food subsidies, but is it the right programs? And is there more that we could be doing? And this might be a great example of how, a little bit of money invested by the federal government made a huge difference for so many families that needed it. These were key pieces that I found that were working and that we need to continue.
Right. Wow, what an interesting program.
Yeah, and it worked really well. And as I said, the feedback was amazing. So, you know, that in itself told me that, you know, maybe that's how we are able to lift many of the families out of the poverty that they're in. It's probably one of the ways that we can guarantee better food security in Canada's northern and Arctic regions. So, you know, it might be a good prototype to look at in terms of how we move forward in addressing these larger problems, and maybe the solution might just be right in front of us today.
Right. Well, to sort of pivot, I guess, to this broader recovery, I understand you're on the Standing Committee of Natural Resources, right?
And yes.
Wondering, what do you see as the future of mining industries, not only during the pandemic, but then as part of Canada's broader recovery efforts?
Well, the mining industry is essential to Canada's overall economy, no doubt about that. And a lot of the export of Canada's mineral resource is coming out of the northern and Arctic regions. For example, in Labrador, we're the largest exporter of iron ore. We're one of the largest exporters of nickel in Canada. When you look around the Arctic regions, especially in Nunavut, you see what's happening in both gold and in iron ore. I mean, it's just amazing mining operations throughout Canada's northern and Arctic regions. And these mining operations are not just contributing to employment opportunities and the economic sustainability in Canada's north, but they're contributing largely to Canada's role in export around the world, and also in Canada's GDP growth. And so that in itself has been a substantial contribution by Canada's north to the country as a whole. Do I think they have a role to play in economic recovery? Absolutely they do. We need to make sure that we're working with each and every one of these mining companies to see that they get through COVID-19 and that they're sustainable into the future. They are the catalyst for economic development in many of these communities. They're the largest employer of Indigenous people in Canada's north right now, and we have to ensure that that continues. One of the things I can say, and that is I was very supportive of how the mining industry has been transitioning itself through the COVID-19 process. They were one of the first large-scale industry sectors that stepped up and said, you know, we're going to go into care and maintenance mode for a period of time, because many of their mines were in isolated regions in Canada's north. It was fly-in, fly-out operations. They did not want to run the risk of bringing coronavirus into those regions. So therefore, they halted their operations. They moved into care and maintenance. They were able to continue to keep things moving with a limited number of people and limited exposure to locals within those regions. And for that, I was very grateful for the support that they showed to the northern regions and jurisdictions in which they operated. The other thing that I was really impressed with was how they started to ramp up their operations. They did so very slowly. Some of them are still ramping up and doing it very moderately. They're protecting local communities. They were one of the first groups of industry sectors that were able to start screening, doing temperature checks, doing COVID-19 testing on their employees before they were going into the mining site and into the regions. So, you know, they have been advanced and innovative in how they have dealt with COVID-19. And they've done so always with the interest of protecting the northern regions and the communities in which they operate. So I'm truly grateful for how they have managed themselves through this particular aspect of the pandemic. And I would expect they're going to continue to do so in a very responsible way until we get to the end of this. So do they have a role to play? They absolutely do. They have a role to play today and into the future. And as the government of Canada, we should be very supportive of the work that they do and a strong partner of the mining industry in Canada to ensure that northern and Arctic regions continue to succeed as a result of those industries.
Right. I'm curious, just sort of, as a young person, just wondering, how does the mining industry sort of adapt and change, you know, into a green economy as we sort of move forward? Like, is this an opportunity for Canada to start being a major player in, like, green tech? And does mining contribute to that at all? I'm curious.
Well, of course they do. You know, we need to have resource development. We need to have mineral development in order to move to a green economy. That's a given. But one of the things that the government of Canada could be doing in partnership with Northern and Arctic mining companies is help move them to cleaner energy sources. Mm-hmm. Many of these mining companies are forced to use, diesel generation and to run their mining operations, not by choice, but that's all that's readily available. Many of them are doing pilot projects in terms of branching out and trying, nuclear, trying wind, trying solar, and so on. But really, I believe as the government of Canada, our greatest partnership with the mining industry today should be in helping grow the green economy and ensure that they have alternate sources of power supply, not just diesel power in Canada's northern Arctic regions. And I believe that these companies want that as well in the conversations that I've had with many of them. But obviously, developing a mine in Canada's north is very expensive. It's,
right,
you know, three times more than a mine in southern Canada, if not more. So, you know, the infrastructure investments are very high for these companies, which means that any mining development in Canada's north has to be a strong, viable entity in order to even consider it because of the cost involved and of doing it. So several things that these companies face when they step into Canada's north. One is that they're going to pay three to four times more for the development of that mine. Secondly, they don't have the infrastructure to start with. They don't have connectivity in terms of Wi-Fi and cell. They don't have energy grids, green energy grids that they can tie into. In many cases, they don't have a transportation network. So they're really starting from the bottom in building an operation. So my advice always has been to the Government of Canada and will continue to be is that if we're going to partner with mining companies, which is really the catalyst for growth in Canada's north, and in a lot of ways when it comes to resource development, then we need to be partnering with them to provide green energy and good connectivity to their operations, but also helping them overcome the transportation challenges that they're faced with. So these are things we have done in the past that we continue to do today and that we need to be doing a lot more of in the future, in my mind.
Right. I wonder, did you have any thoughts on, you know, this potential sale of TMAC, which is a Canadian mining company, to a state-owned Chinese company? You know, what can the federal government, I guess, do to sort of help Canadian businesses better?
Yeah, well, there's no restriction on the purchase right now by a Chinese company. There's no Canadian restrictions around that. And until there is, it's perfectly legal for it to go ahead. I mean, it's no secret that there has been a lot of foreign investment in the mining industry across Canada. I expect it will continue to be for a long time to come. But it's been foreign investment in the mining industry that has allowed the growth of a lot of new mines in recent years in Canada. In terms of what's happening with China right now, to my understanding, there is nothing that restricts Chinese investment. And until there is, you know, it is lawful.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Well, I'll just sort of pivot, you know, again towards the future, and I'll just ask you one more question because I don't want to keep you too long. You know, there's so much uncertainty right now, and I think a lot of people feel afraid and uncertain about their futures. But I think other people sort of are starting to see this as an opportunity for Canada, you know, to sort of move forward in a different way. What role do you see the North being able to provide Canada, you know, to help us rise to this moment and then come out on the other side a stronger country?
Well, I think that two things happen in any crisis. One, you really start seeing the strength in people and in a nation, or you start seeing the weaknesses.
Right.
I think in Canada's case, we've seen tremendous strength, both in leadership and communities and regions across the country. I think COVID-19, despite the health and economic crisis that it left our country in, at the end of the day, we will come out stronger. As a nation, just like we have, we came out stronger through the Second World War and through other economic crises within our history. So we have a record of being able to manage ourselves through some of the most difficult and challenging situations that a nation could face, and at the end of the day, turning it into real positive outcomes for people. I don't see this pandemic doing anything different for Canadians, but obviously we have to get through this until there is an antidote for it. And until then, it's going to be very difficult, and it's going to be huge change in terms of how we do our jobs, how we educate ourselves, how we interact with one another. But it doesn't mean that it restricts us in opportunities. It forces us to be more creative and more innovative in the ways that we address the problems that are in front of us. In Canada's North, it will be no different.
Right.
We have a tremendous contribution to make to Canada, but we need the infrastructure to be able to do it. We need the hands up so that we can prove ourselves over and over how effective and how powerful we are as a part of this country. Sometimes the North is forgotten because we're a huge landmass, we're sparsely populated, and we are very remote. And sometimes when you're far away, you're often forgotten, and we always contemplate that when you live in the North all your life. So what I want to say is this. In the past, as the northern region of Canada, we have proven our resilience. Mm-hmm. We have proven our ability to face some of the greatest challenges of our time with the most limited resources in being able to confront those challenges. And we have come out successful. We intend to continue to do the same, but we need investment. We need infrastructure investment so that Canada's North can certainly be a stronger and more powerful contributor to the strength of our nation.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave it.
Well, thank you, Erica, for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
That's it for today on COVID-19 in Labrador, and a huge thanks to Yvonne Jones for taking time out of her busy schedule to sit down with me. Stay tuned for next week. See you then.